Welcome to the Belper Beer Club podcast. We're four intrepid beer explorers from Derbyshire, and we thought it was about time we put out a podcast. And here it is. My name's John.
My name's Sean.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Jamie.
This week's podcast was recorded with Alter Ego Brewery, recorded in the middle of July 2023. This is their story.
On today's podcast, we're joined by Matt from Alter Ego, a brewery who are relatively close to us, based in Alfreton, Derbyshire, and formed in January 2018. With their beers being very much present in most decent establishments locally, we were really keen to hear and share their story. Having moved from the original home in Hena, they now boast two venues in which you can drink beers direct, with the new brewery in Alfreton opening up a tap on the last Friday and Saturday of the month, and the Tip-In Micropub, which we are located in Losco, opening more traditional hours. There's plenty of reasons to seek out their beers. Matt, please can you introduce yourselves and tell us about yours and Alter Ego's journey to date?
Kyle, thanks for inviting me. So yeah, as you stated, the Alter Ego Brewing Co. Limited company was formed in January 2018. And over the summer of 2018, I found a small 500 square foot industry unit in Hena next to Shipley Park.
Okay.
And then purchased the kit, which is a 2.5 barrel kit.
So what's that in litres?
In litres, it's, I think the tanks themselves were, had like a total capacity of about 500 litres.
Yeah.
We'd get 9 firkins out of the brew.
Yeah.
Like best yield, 9 firkins. And the reason for going 2.5 barrel was because at the time, when I set the brewery up, I was working full time and was doing the brewery part time. And based on the time I had available to brew, the number of brews I could do a week, I worked out 2.5 barrel was sort of the minimum capacity we needed to be able to cover all the overheads and just give us a decent start, basically.
So did you start like most people as a home brewer?
Yeah, so I started home brewing in 2011 with the usual sort of, I like to call them cup of soup.
Yeah.
Brew kits where you just add water to it.
Yeah.
I'm fairly certain somebody bought me the kit as a gift, but I cannot for the life of me remember who it was. But I can remember what kit it was. It was the Woodford Swerry.
Oh, yes. Oh,
classic.
Yeah. It turned out pretty decent, but...
I'm still brewing those, by the way.
Yeah.
That's the limit of my expertise.
Yeah, but I quickly sort of dived in headfirst into all of the sort of intricacies and...
So yeah, so while you were home brewing then, you
kind of got the bug straight away, and yeah. Like, I didn't do many of those before. It was a brewing bag,
yeah.
Sort of all grain, so using all the, you know, like the raw ingredients as you would.
Yeah, scaled down brewing,
yeah,
really.
Initially, yeah. But at the time, we didn't have things like Grainfathers,
mm-hmm.
Brewzillas, so it was like a stock pot,
yeah.
Mesh bag.
Is it like 3 different pots you have?
Initially, it was just the 1 pot with mesh bag, and then that was quite small, probably like 10 litres or something.
Yeah.
And then yeah, it was picnic cool box,
mm-hmm.
for the mash tun, tea urn,
yeah,
the boil kettle, you know, cobbled together with various hoses and fittings,
yeah.
And pumps.
And yes. How sophisticated was the fermenter back in those days?
It was basically like brew bucket type,
yeah.
Things. I was doing temperature control. I knew that was pretty key,
yeah.
Early on.
It stands to reason, doesn't it? You,
yeah.
Put all the effort into the hot side,
yeah.
And then you leave it for 8 to 10 days just to chance.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I think that's the reason why a lot of people have bad experiences with the cup of soup ones, because you mix it up and then chuck it in an airing cupboard,
mm-hmm.
Leave it. You don't really know what temperature it's fermented at, and then you open it up and drink it, and you've got all sorts of crazy flavours and esters from the yeast fermenting at like 40 degrees next to your water tank in a bearing cupboard.
Is that your experience, Paul?
Yeah, I just, all I know is it's done when the yeast head goes back down again.
Okay.
Done.
Job done. So, so I was doing fermentation control, which was just a bucket in a fridge. We didn't even have the ink birds that you can sort of buy off the shelf.
Mm.
We had to make, you got these things called STC-1000s or something, which was like the temperature control thermostat, but then you had to wire it in yourself.
It's a DIY style.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically, it was all very DIY back then. And it wasn't long after that when you started getting these shiny brew kit, same at home brewers.
Yeah.
I mean, what you can get now is absolutely amazing.
Mm.
Never known it so good.
Yeah, no, I'm unfortunate that I do have a grandfather, like you mentioned. I have SS Brewtech fermenters.
Mm.
I have a glycol chiller. So all these things
it's
that
like, just a,
back in the day.
Same as a commercial setup, just on a smaller scale. So I was doing that from, like I say, 2011. It wasn't long before I started doing all grain and built a brew kit that was about 30 litres, enough to fill a corny keg. And did that until 2014 when my daughter was born and I didn't get as much opportunity to homebrew. And it was kind of in danger of getting sidelined. So I thought, well, I'm going to have to set up a brewery. so I don't stop brewing. And then from 2014 to 2018, it was sort of crunching numbers, developing recipes, looking for somewhere, and trying to push myself into actually doing
it. So did you start up on your own? Or did you go to a business partner?
No, on my own, yeah. Got a startup loan, which I think was 14 grand.
Okay.
Which obviously wasn't enough, but it got us started. Initially, where I live, the house came with two garages that were kind of connected together. So the initial plan was to set the brewery up in those.
Yes.
Cause it was like ideal. I've got not got to pay rent. But they didn't have mains, drainage, or water. So I inquired with our local water authority, Severn Trent, about getting that installed. And it was something daft like 15 grand.
Right, all of you.
And I was like, I think that was before I got the startup loan, when I was trying to work things out. And I just said to the wife, I was like, I might as well just rent a unit. You know, like, I think it was £102 a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can go and get the kit. Get it set up and just start, rather than, you know, sinking loads of money and trying to work in a tight space.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. Got the kit set up, and then November 2018, just after the day before my 35th birthday, did the first brew day, and then a couple of weeks later, the first guile was released into the world.
So how did that go in terms of from home brewing to then having to go and sell your own beer?
Well, before I did the first brew, possibly before I got the brew kit, I did visit a few of the local micro pubs and sort of gauged interest. And there was a lot of interest there. So that was reassuring.
Yeah.
You know, and like I say, I was working full time, so all it needed to do at that point in time was just pay for itself.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a massive amount of stress. And I think all I had to do was sell one batch every 2 weeks, which was 9 firkins every 2 weeks, and that kind of covered everything.
So you're brewing every weekend, or was it an evening thing at that time?
I was brewing once a week, and it would either be, I'd managed to get Wednesday off from my full-time job by loading those hours onto other days. So I was doing some like crazy days, but I managed to get Wednesday off. So I'd brew like a Wednesday, mm-hmm. 1 week. And then we had three taps. I say weeks, it's more of us now, but at the time, yeah, it was just me. I had three tanks, so I was brewing, you know, Wednesday or one day on the weekend, and then delivering on a Wednesday as well.
So real one man band.
One man band.
You see that quite a lot, don't you?
Yeah, that's the one thing that freaks me out. I'm from a sort of manufacturing background, and everyone we speak to, they're like, "Oh, there's two of us. There's one of us."
Yeah.
And I'm like, how the hell could that possibly be?
It's hard work.
I know, because you can regiment it through. Like, yeah. You can start the first one, the next one's going, and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you can have cleaning days in between and lots all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But it just so freaks me out. You know, even if you think about this little shop, you know, they've probably got three people working in that little shop. And yet you can have a national distribution, potentially.
There's like five of us here, and we're at the pub that was sat in the micro pub, mm-hmm. there's five working here, and at the time when we took this place on, I was still on my own at the brewery.
That's the bit. Constantly, I can get my head around it but it's, in terms of you could literally be shipping beer all over Europe if you're so inclined, mm. as a one man band, it's kind of blown my mind slightly.
Yeah, it's minutes and even seconds become extremely precious when you're on your own. Yeah, if something breaks, then that's like.
I suppose it's like a bicycle.
Once you get going,
once you get going, you know when to stop the rhythm, sort of thing.
No, this is it. Yeah.
But yeah, we've heard a few disasters. Someone mentioned Coconut recently, didn't they?
Yeah, that was Pentridge actually.
Was it? Yeah. I mean, can you imagine selecting an ingredient that totally F's up your brew kit?
Yeah.
That's not what you want to do.
Ruined his canning line, everything like that. Yeah.
That's not what you want.
Yeah, no, not really. So then from November 2018, the first batch went out. And then just kind of kept it rolling, literally, for like another 12, 13 months. And then the micro pub that was sat in became available, and I saw that as sort of the perfect opportunity to go full time with it, because then we've got
an outlet.
We'll be taking our beer every week without fail.
So
just for the listeners, we're in a micro pub. It's, I would say, sort of midi pub rather than a micro pub, but extremely airy. A couple of rooms and a nice area around the back, and it's got absolutely everything you want from a small.
It's probably larger than, well, it's certainly larger than a lot of micro pubs I've been in, but it's still got the same sort of micro pub ethos.
Yeah,
and it's predominantly Cass, and there's no sort of like.
Well, I was going to say
TV screens or.
Yeah, I was going to say the balance between the keg and the cask is pretty good actually in here. Cause
we shift more cask than we do keg.
Yeah. I mean, we were in one of Derby's leading pubs at the weekend, the Alexander, and you know, they've got the same sort of balance to what we've got in here. In fact, you know, they've probably got about three more beers on than in here, so the range here is going to be pretty good.
Yeah,
well, I think we first. We first tried one of your beers on one of our beer nights. The first time that we came across as the Bud Beer Club was in July 2020.
Okay, yeah.
Was the first time that we came across, and that was
COVID times.
Yeah, good COVID times. Right at pretty much the start of, I think we probably started about sort of the April or May. Mm-hmm. So it's quite early on. I'd got some beers in from a brewery called Boundary. From Northern Ireland, and also we were having a fire Because it must have been a period where we
could
get
together. Yeah, we were allowed outside.
Yeah, when we were allowed outside, weren't we?
So
we
had a substantial meal when you had to have a substantial
meal. So we were meeting my house. And we had a big fire, and I was getting some beers from Adventure.
Adventure beers,
which always makes me laugh because I get a lot of beers. And I think it's a cracking little box shop. I've never been there, but I get deliveries from there every now and again. Always makes me chuckle there. It's called Adventure Beer, which makes it sound like you think the beer's going to be coming from everywhere.
Yeah, they're all local.
Which is, I don't know if that's planned, but I always think that's quite an amusing little... And I was getting some beers from there, and I noticed that you had... it was a small fire. So at the time, I'd never come across Ultra Ego, and I didn't think anyone else was, so I got a little bit of a bonus beer to go with the campfire at the end of the night.
Yeah.
And that was... And so I think, you know, just thinking about how far... from having never heard of the brewery before and having that first beer, but knowing that the other three, I think, was everyone else's first sample pointing for beers. Now we go around Belper, and I had at the weekend I had Oxymoron, which was great at the Angels in Belper. And then I was part of the food festival. And saw your can in a local coffee shop. So as we said earlier on, it's a Dino beer, which is a cracking little table beer. It's great. I'm just thinking that even, you know, I know Belper's not far away, but it's very rare. Particularly in Angels, it's very rare to go in into places in Belper and see your beer. So that's not a long period of time to go from having never seen you in Belper to.
I did see when they had their Dark Ale Festival at Angels, I remember having some of your stronger beers on there.
Yeah, we had Imperial Stout.
Yeah.
And I had the Moore Small Fire. Even small, that's it. Yeah. In Suds and Soda. So I had Suds and Soda in Derby.
Yeah.
And that was good. I mean, that wasn't good actually, because
it was very sweet, that one.
Well, no, sorry, when I said it wasn't good, the beer was very good. It wasn't good for me because I was doing the one of our radio shows in Derby, but because of the buses
you went
got in a little bit early, and thought I've got half an hour, I've got 20 minutes, I'll just go in Suds and Soda. And I think I wanted to buy a can of one of the American beers.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I'll buy a can, and I looked over and saw this. Even sworn it like 10.5%, something like that.
Yeah, I think it was 10.4.
So I was thinking, I've got 15 minutes. Basically,
the fact that you enjoyed the smaller version.
Absolutely. Yeah. I thought, you know, when in Rome.
Yeah.
So I thought I'll just, neck half a pint of 10.5% beer before going on the radio. I think the radio went quite well because of that. but just for saying that, it's locally, but it's nice to. And I always, whenever I go into a pub, I'll always try and. Pick a beer from a brewery that I feel some sort of connection to. So
yeah.
I couldn't have not gone in there and not bought it.
So how far is your reach then? Yeah, how far is your reach?
Most of our stuff does go locally. We deliver weekly. We've only got a Vauxhall combo, so we can get like 10 casks in it.
Yeah.
So when delivery day comes around, it's usually like 3 runs out. Most of it goes locally, so we're in Alphington now, so this isn't our immediate area, but it's not far away. Hina, Ilkeston, Long Eaton, Derby, Nottingham. The furthest we deliver is Chesterfield, Sheffield, every now and again, Bakewell, Matlock.
Have you ever seen a check in far and wide on Untappd or something? When how the hell did my beer get out
there? Obviously, with having beer in cans, they kind of go all over the place. And beers in kegs, whether it's sort of the stainless rentable ones or the key kegs, they go through the courier network, so they can end up anywhere. And I don't look at Untappd as a massive amount. But every now and again you look at it and I'll be surprised, like the Hanging Bat in Edinburgh, and you're like, wow.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good. Or when you print the postage yeah. label off and stick it on. Sometimes it's quite surprising.
Yeah.
Like Penzance or something.
Oh, cool.
So they can go anywhere, the kegs and the cans, yeah. obviously.
So obviously COVID then happened, and I don't want to dwell on that too much. Obviously business kind of fought through it, but obviously you took the step at some point to then kind of upscale, I'm presuming, from here to look into Alphington.
Yeah, so once we got the pub, it was another income, obviously, so it kind of took the pressure off or give us some flexibility to expand the brewery. So. One of the first steps that we took was to get some DPVs, uni tanks, pressurized tanks, so we could do keg and can. Yeah. Still using our 2.5 barrel kits at the time. So one of the tanks was 10 hec, 1,000 litres, so we were
double filling.
Brewing to fill that one. And it didn't quite, we never got 1,000 litres into it.
No.
Because it was like 450 litres per brew going in. And then it was getting ridiculous. We're like brewing four times a week. And it's like, I can't. At this point, I think I'd taken on Stephen, who's responsible for our, he's been responsible for our artwork from day one. But he was doing that kind of on a freelance basis while he was working full time. But he got fed up with his job, and I needed help in the brewery. And because he was involved anyway, I was just kind of sounding him out if he was interested. In
this must be a first. The can art guy is now brewing. That's the first time I've heard that. I like it.
What do you reckon to digging out mash tuns and spending your life cleaning?
Yeah.
And he was keen, surprisingly. So at that point, obviously, we needed. So like I'm responsible for him at that point, and we need to increase revenue. We can't brew 4 days a week because we couldn't do anything else, like mountain of admin piling up and packaging beer, so you had long days. So it's like, well, we need a bigger kit. So I was on the lookout for second hand kit, and I was informed that Pentridge still had the first kit that they started brewing on. Like tucked away in the brewery, and it had been up for sale for a while, so I got in touch with Ryan. I had a bit of a relationship with Ryan at Pentridge because we were having their beer in here, and Ryan's sort of like the
sales guy.
So I just messaged Ryan and said, oh yeah, you've got a brew kit for sale, can I come have a look at it? And I did, and it was 6 barrel kit. Previously belonged to Nuts Brook, Stanley Compton.
I think he did mention
West Allen. They ended up in Stanley Common on a farm. They scaled down and did like brewing experiences or something.
Okay.
Well, that sounds something I could buy into that.
Yeah.
Brewing experience, like a little camping trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get some beer to take home.
Yeah, obviously wasn't that successful, but yeah, sign me up.
So Pentridge had that kit, and then we went to look at it. It was like, yeah, perfect. Price is right. We'll get that.
Yeah.
Had one of the regulars who comes in here is a farmer, so got his tractor, his trailer, strapped it, and then me and Steve followed it in the van. Behind, pipping if it looked like it was going to come off. Yeah. And then we got that connected up, and yeah, that made life easier because we didn't have to brew four times to get the sort of volume that we needed. So then it got to the point where it was like, we could do some, we need more space. It was really struggling, it was really tight. It got to the point where it was pallet trucking like everything out in the morning. So we had just space to operate and then pallet trucking it back in. So from that quite early on when Stephen joined, it must have been the end of 2000, beginning of 2001, I started looking for places. There was nothing in Hina where we were located, just nothing available.
Mm-hmm.
There's units, but not available. So I think I must have looked at half a dozen places scattered about all over Derbyshire. And then one became available in Alphington near the train station on Meadow Lane Industrial Estate.
Okay.
And it was, yeah, it was like four times the size of this 500 square foot unit that we started with. Nice sort of empty shell, blank canvas,
okay,
next to the train station, very convenient. Price was good, so I was like, yeah, we'll go for it.
Yeah.
And then we got the keys in July last year, 2022.
I think your first tap was around about Christmas, if I recall.
October.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, so we got the keys in July. My mate Ash is a builder, so we got him in to dig up the floor and put floor drains in. And then we filled all the fermenters up in Hina, mm-hmm. then moved the brew kit. And as we packaged that, each fermenter,
makes sense.
Started moving those over. And then September, was putting it all together. 1st of October was the first brew day, or the first week in October. And then I said to Steve, right, we're opening a tap room at the end of October. And it's like, what? Why? So did that. So put loads of pressure on ourselves and gave ourselves lots of work. We had lots of help from friends as well. So.
So on a typical tap room night down at Alphington Brewery, then what sort of range of beers do you have on?
It's mainly keg down there. Yeah. We have two casks. Which will either be like two of our core or a mix if we've got like a special and cast this out. And then on keg, Forcefield's on there obviously because that's our flagship keg beer. And then there'll be Imperial Stout. I like quite a varied selection of beers, so I think the last one we had, so I'll take the next one. The next one we're going to have a Saison.
Oh, nice.
Red IPA. Imperial Stout, Easy Pale, Dipper, probably.
So, yeah. I just, where's?
Lager, brewing a lager as well.
Oh, nice. That's
very small scale. I did invest in a, I can't remember if this was on there when we were talking about the homebrew stuff or not, but I did get sort of like a Greenfather sort of rip off. So,
okay.
At the minute, I'm trying to perfect.
Heller's
sort of recipe. So,
what's happened to your old brew kit?
That still lives. When we were based in Hina, just to make things even more cramped and complicated, I'm good friends with Darren at Urban Chicken.
Okay.
And he was brewing on like 200 litre kit, and he was looking to up his volume.
He's in his garage, isn't he?
Yeah, he was getting a lot of demand, a lot of people asking for beer. So I said, well, when it was, they basically ended up having a tank. So he had a fermenter in there, and then when we weren't brewing, he used our brew kit and brewed into it. So when we took Pentridge's old brew kit on, I asked Darren if he wanted our brew kit, and he was very keen because obviously he was used to it. And the way the pots were designed, they're quite narrow and tall, so they don't take up a lot of floor space, so they're kind of perfect for going in a garage. So he kind of snapped my hand off, and he's got them in there, and he's brewing on them. I visited him this morning, and he's got beer in two tanks there.
I want to trace brew kits.
Yeah.
I think brew kits are a bit like sort of lead or rhythm guitarist in like a 1960s rock band. Remember, you used to be that like rock family histories, and be like
Yardbirds, and
he played for them, exactly, and then he moved there, and then he moved there, and all of a sudden he was in this band and that band. And I think Brew Kits is every time we speak to someone, it's like they bought their brew kit from somebody who bought a brew kit from. And I reckon you could trace a brew kit.
Yeah.
For like all the way around the country, just following where they've gone.
It's like traumas or something like that.
Yeah, it is, absolutely like that. It's done its
Did they ever exceed their life expectancy?
The stainless steel.
They seem to go on forever, don't they?
I mean, let's just hit it with a forklift or something. keep it should be.
Yeah, we had an exploding Chinese one, didn't we?
That was from Atom. Yeah.
Was that Atom?
Yeah, Atom, unfortunately, they invested nearly £1 million in 3 massive fermenters. And when they went to pressure test them, 2 of them went. And they went to go into China to go and try and organise them to get repaired, and the company had gone bust.
Wow.
So they were left with these 2 fermenters that weren't usable.
I would like to have been in the brewery when that happened, I think. I think I'd have been changing my pants.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where it was tested or how it was tested, but I know what you mean. Yeah.
But you mentioned Urban Chicken there. I believe you've done a collaboration with them, and actually looking on tap, it looks like it's one of your highest rated beers, actually.
Is it? Urban Peaked, was it?
Yeah, you did a barrel aged version of that as well, I think.
Yes, bourbon barrel aged. Yeah, so the first collab we did together was a milk stout inspired by Toblerone Urban Peaks.
Okay. Oh yeah, of course.
I like doing sort of imperial versions of like the small fire and the barrel aged one. So yeah, but since then they were all brewed at Alter Ego, but we did one recently that we did at Darren's on my old brew kit, which was nice.
Yeah. Bit nostalgia.
Yeah. And that was an English IPA with Chevalier Heritage Malt and some of the new UK operators. Okay. Yeah.
That'd be interesting. When's that due out?
That is out.
It's in the fridge. Perfect. Segue. Let's try
it's
one.
It's not in the fridge.
I'm going to try one.
Can I just say, I've got a... this is how good Urban Peaks is. So I've had that beer.
Yeah.
And what beers do I hate?
What beers do you hate?
Yeah.
Peanut butter.
Nutty beers.
Yeah, that was...
I hate nutty beers. And this, I've just looked at my...
almonds.
Untapped chicken, and it says, at last a nutty beer that I quite like.
There you go.
Which, for me, is massive praise. Nuts is something
I drink tonight.
Yeah, that's... And I just, like last night, beer quite like creamy with a lot of chocolate at the fore, almond hangs in the background.
Was that the Peaks?
Peaks. So Peaks. It was a 5.5% one.
Sounds like they amped it up after that.
So I normally.
What do you call Twin Peaks? What do you call?
Peaked.
I normally hate.
Double Peaks.
Yeah.
I normally hate nutty beers. So that is like. Massively high praise.
Yeah, it had the honey. I think the honey was more sort of the most dominant 3 like key flavours.
I suppose you're going to copy Toblerone then, yes. Yes. Well,
yeah, I was pretty happy with that. And the third barrel aged one was nice, yeah.
Certainly looking on tap, your highest rated beers are your dark ones generally.
And yeah, I think strong beers, that tends to be the way on tap goes, is the stronger the beer.
Yeah, that's where we started.
Better rating it.
When we were doing our lockdown sessions, basically, if we put an Impy in there, it was guaranteed to get like 0.25 more than anything else. Yeah. Up to a point, and then we realised that was what was going on, and we kind of remodulated.
I know it's a good question for later on, but I think we kind of alluded to it a little bit in what you were saying. Sometimes you go to breweries and there's a known style that they're kind of famous for, and then I think you mentioned a few minutes ago that you like a range of styles.
Yeah.
And
I would say we're probably not known for any.
Yeah, I was going to say that you really, in a relatively small number of beers, 60 odd beers you've done.
Yeah.
I mean, you are smashing across the whole spectrum of of beers.
Right. Yeah, the reason, I mean, to say we've been brewing for 5 years this year, there's not, 60 is quite modest, I suppose, isn't it? But I do like a core range.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm a fan of a core range, so got some of our core beers like that. Vorsfield and Mr. Brown, our best bitter.
Yeah.
They've probably been brewed at 30, 40 times.
Really?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
At least. But yeah, I do like sort of a diverse selection of beers when I go to a tap room.
Yeah, we're the same. We definitely want to go across the range. Because obviously what we've noticed, and you'll be quite familiar with this, that everyone's gone pale over the last sort of 12, 18 months to the exclusion of some of these other styles. Mm. And, you know, we loved it in the golden era where everyone was pumping out all the styles.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a happy medium in the end.
Yeah, you know? The tap room's good for that because, I mean, in the pub setting, obviously you need to put on what's going to ship, especially when it comes to cask.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you need to
take a shelf.
Yeah. So it's a bit, I'd say probably a bit safer in the micro pub, sort of what you'd expect. But at the tap room,
yeah.
You can kind of experiment and go wild.
Yeah, I love what you said about that. You just mentioned your range, it was absolutely amazing. Like a saison in there,
yeah.
You know. You said you like amping things up, so you've got that aspect to it. So it all sounds pretty exciting.
Yeah, and it has, because like I say, this is the only keg beer that we have available. I'm pointing at Vorsfield.
Yeah, Vorsfield.
I realise we're not being.
It's a good time. It's a cracking beer. Actually.
Yeah, no, it really is.
Juicy, hazy. It's just a bright beer, isn't it? 4.5%.
Is that what it is?
4.5%.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wow. One of our best sellers in the pub. And because I struggle to keep up with demand for just our pub and our tap room, it doesn't really get anywhere else.
Really? So you get exclusive
pours
of it at the tap room. And
it's
the
a bit of a hidden treasure there.
Yeah, yeah. We're filling 50 litre kegs of it. So they go. I mean, there is another place actually who has it on permanent. But yeah, it doesn't get... Ideally, I'd be, as soon as like the tank's empty, we're filling up Vorsfield again,
yeah.
So we can get a bit further afield.
Yeah, the 4.5 is quite interesting, because I did a little poll on Twitter one time, that's what people thought session strength was. You know, and it was, you know, all the answers through the book, but basically it needs to be under 5 to be sort of sessionable. And I think, yeah, it fits the bill perfectly.
Yeah, that's the idea. It's the sort of beer you can come in and drink. Easily drink 4 or 5 pints.
It's pintable.
Pintable. I've never heard that one. Who's that? Who's created that?
Yeah, that's kind of my aim for all of our beers, even the ones that are a bit strong. You know,
yeah.
As long as they're like, I mean, I'm not encouraging people to drink pints and pints of beer.
Yeah,
stuff, but
yeah.
It should be very drinkable.
To sort of brewing like the whole different range of beers, is that because you like drinking a full range of beers, or is it more because you like challenging yourself with brewing lots of beers?
It's because I like them, so I keep getting asked if I do a kettle sour.
Mm.
But I'm not particularly fond of kettle sours, so probably won't brew one. I prefer like lambics.
Yeah.
Which I'm not going to mess about with.
Well,
those yeast in the brewery, because I'll just contaminate everything else.
Yeah. Anything the next year, taste of it.
Yeah, exactly. The Alpers and lambics, it's got a sort of ring to it, though, hasn't it? You
know? The terroir of that Alpers.
Yeah, the terroir.
Yeah. So yeah, it's basically stuff I like to drink, and I like to sort of crack it.
Yeah,
get it to where I want it to be. So inevitably, these beers end up getting brewed quite a few times before they get to the point where I'm happy with it.
So you're happy with this one now? Has this kind of had many iterations?
Yes, it's had a lot of iterations. I'm happy with it now. It's gone through different yeast strains, different IBUs, different final gravities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm happy with that now. Same as our best bitter, went through lots of iterations. There's probably, I mean, we brew probably about 6 or 7 beers on a regular basis.
Yeah.
I think there's only like 50% of them are to the point where I've like stopped tinkering with them.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just trying to, obviously I've got something in my mind that I'm trying to aim for, so it's just tinkering with it until I get there. Yeah. Which is part of the fun. I love that.
On this strength, I think you're doing a good job in terms of
cheers.
I mean, there's not many 4.5% hazy pails that are better than this, is there really?
I mean, Verdant Light Bulb, that's kind of in that territory, isn't it? For me. I don't know what hops
are. Yeah, it's just
that one. So can I ask where the name Alter Ego came from?
I'm not so much these days, I don't really. I can't remember last time I picked up a graphic novel or a comic book, but I was sort of a graphic novel nerd. Obviously this was like a sideline, so this was like, the brewery was sort of my alter ego.
Yeah, from, okay.
All right, so sort of Spider-Man, Peter Parker.
So
Brewmeister.
Brewmeister. Exactly. Brewmeister at night.
It's my alter ego from my day job, which was sat at a desk, sat at a computer 9 to 5, so this was like, I don't know which one was the superhero.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can guess on that one.
Yeah. Alter Ego. So that's kind of where that name came from. It just jumped at me, like I think most good ideas do, don't they? They kind of present themselves.
Were there any previous ones, or did you be on that straight away, was it?
That's it. Yeah.
That's good. Maybe it's time to talk about the can art, because obviously graphic novels, segue.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's quite, obviously with something we sat in the tap here, and we can see that there's lots of artwork on the wall which we've seen on cans. As we said, there's only been 60 beers brewed, so I guess that's 60 can designs, I suppose. And we've also established the crazy idea that the can art guy is also your main brew guy, but what's the sort of story? How do you come up with this stuff?
So I've known Stephen since school, and he's always he studied graphic design, I think, at university, and he's always worked in like graphics industry.
Yeah.
And he shares a passion for comic books and graphic novels like me, so. And I knew I liked the stuff that he does, so there was no question of who I was going to ask to do the artwork.
So how does it work then? Do you kind of say, this is my beer name, this is what I've
early,
got?
In the early days, like I say, he wasn't working at the brewery, he was just doing it on sort of a freelance basis, and I said to him, so that was the first, Echo Chamber was the first beer that we released. And I says, I want you to do some artwork, Steve, for a beer called Echo Chamber. It's like, right. Have you got any sort of spec, hints, idea? Oh, no, you know what.
Free
you know
reign.
What I like. Go on, go for it. And it's like, no, we're not working like that.
No.
If you want this to, if you want this to be like, if you want me to do the artwork, then you need to give me a bit more direction and then we'll sort it out. So I think that's just said something like, well, it's bad. It's a criticism of social media, Steve.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's an Echo Chamber, and then he did people with phones for heads with like thumbs and
okay.
So, I was giving him like some direction, probably not enough, he would say.
Yeah.
And then these days, sometimes he'll come up with the name and
the artwork. The day, he's also thinking creativity about what.
So it's the work split. I mean, I don't get involved in the artwork at all, because it's beyond me. But like the day to day at the brewery, the split of like the sort of manual work is pretty 50-50. So we both do everything basically.
Yeah.
But I suppose he does more than me, because he does the artwork. But I have to do bookkeeping and the admins.
Yeah. Okay, I hope he's listening to this because there's a massive compliment there.
Wow. Yeah, I can't remember if I mentioned on this podcast or earlier on, but the beer I had last night was Dino Beer.
I was just about to get that.
On the can, I think it just mentions this is called Dino Beard. We'll say this is called Dino Beard. So I want to draw dinosaurs in Matt's beard.
Yeah. So this is an example of Steve coming up with the name, coming up with the artwork, and he did all that before I'd even seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "What do you reckon is this one, Matt?" I was like, "What have you done there? Why have you put my face on a can?" I wasn't impressed, but.
So you've got a big beard, very big.
With dinosaurs in it, yeah.
Oversized beard, and dinosaurs poking out.
Well, it certainly says fun, doesn't it? Obviously, a close work relationship here, and a little bit of rib taking there, so yeah.
Yeah.
And it looks like he's sleeping there as well, which is.
I always look like I'm asleep.
Okay.
I think he portrayed me pretty well there, to be honest.
I mean, for those who are listening and haven't seen any of Altigo's. Cans on sale. I mean, it's all the cans are just really bright, really colourful.
Yeah, I think they're identifiable as
Altigo
beer because of Steve's style, which is what I like. I liked that like back in the day when sort of craft beer was taking off in the UK, and you had I remember Magic Rock cans always standing out. They had their own distinct style. Like
Tiny Rebel kind of was a bit similar like that, wasn't it? Yeah. Back in the day when they had Stay Puft and things like that. They kind of got a bit off.
So I like it's like Kernel, isn't it? Which is like the other extreme.
Yeah, it's
easily identifiable as one of their beers. Yeah. And I quite like that.
It's definitely right.
When
you're in a bottle shop, you know, when you took a little sort of first look, and you'll go, recognise that. It just definitely works.
Yeah. Even if you've never had a beer before and you don't know the beer, but you recognise the brand.
It works. Yeah. And I've got to say, I feel a bit bad because I actually wasn't so familiar with you in Cannes. But now I'm educated. I can see exactly what's going on here. Good range, great graphics.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so there's a couple of questions coming from the listeners. One of them is, you know, in terms of, obviously we've had this abundance of styles in the last few years of craft brewery scene, which is like, you think is like the most overrated. Which you see and you just look at it and you go, yeah, not for me.
It's very subjective, isn't it? But I would have to say Kettle Sours.
Right.
They're just, I'm a big fan of sour beers, lambics.
Yeah.
Traditional sours that are aged in wood and
have that kind of almost winey quality.
Side dry, it's always compared to more of like a sort of balsamic vinegar type of sourness. Whereas the kettle sours are more like fizzy sweets, I suppose.
Yeah.
It just doesn't do it for me. I know a lot of people love them, including my wife. She absolutely loves every single beer that Vault City makes.
I was going to say, that's their kind of market.
But it's subjective, isn't it? You know, not everyone likes everything.
Yeah.
The world would be boring if they did, I suppose.
So we're not likely to see a kettle sour for you anytime soon then?
No. No, not likely. Not likely.
Okay.
Is it Berliner Weiss? Is that a kettle sour?
Don't think so.
No.
I don't think so.
Is it
Berliner Weiss?
No, that's...
It's not such a sour. It is slightly sour. You can add wood rock or something to it as well.
Well, I like Berliner Weisses, but I like unadulterated ones because sometimes I think... You can, sometimes it's nicer with the fruit and the flavours, but sometimes for the Berliner Weiss, it kills the style for me a little bit sometimes.
I normally go, I always go Belgian, so that's sort of my go to sour.
We did go over to Belgium last year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We went to Brussels and we went to Cantillon.
Yeah.
And there still were a few bottles in the fridge. I managed to restrain myself from drinking them. They're great.
Yeah, and like I say, a lot of people love sours, kettle sours, and we always keep a kettle sour in our can fridge in the pub, just because, you know, people do come and ask for it. But that's kind of a recent addition. In the past, I had Thornbridge's
interpretation of a lambic. Amongst the Ruins.
Yes, yes.
It's one of my favourite beers from.
I've got a bottle of that in the fridge, actually.
Somebody asked for sour, and I was like, yeah, I've got this in it. Try that one. Oh, yeah, I love sours. I love sours. Well, yeah, pop it open. There's your glass.
Bit of theatre.
Poured it out, and I tasted it. Ugh, what's that? Sour!
Yeah, yeah.
But I think a lot of people have sort of been introduced to sours through kettle sours, haven't they? So they kind of have a different idea of what a sour should be.
That's great. Yeah, I think that's answered that one.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Not that I'm knocking them or anything, you know.
No.
There's a place for everything in this
world.
You've
always got to have a top and a bottom of some of this.
There's a place for everything in this world.
Yeah. And then a bit more serious, obviously the different changes to the sort of small brewers tax relief, etc. Means there's going to be some changes in the next few months. Just want to explain how that affects you?
Yes, so HMRC sent us a letter. Obviously, I was aware of this prior to receiving this letter, but it's just made me laugh that the letter was sent out
quite
from HMRC on the 4th of July, and then it most people's letterboxes like 2 or 3 days later to tell them that in less than 4 weeks' time, the entire duty system is about to change.
Mm.
So I found that quite comical, but it didn't surprise me. But yeah, basically, anything. For anyone who doesn't know, which is a lot of pubs, which I will get to in a minute, about how it affects pubs, and they haven't really been informed. But for anyone who doesn't know, anything below 3.5% will have quite a significant reduction in the duty that is liable, and anything over 3.5% is going up, the duty is going up. Apart from this little sweet spot between 7.5 and 8.5,
right,
which will go down because previously the high strength threshold was 7.5.
Okay,
that's been bumped to 8.5. So anything in that sort of 7.5,
that's where you need to be drinking.
4,
that's where you need to be drinking, guys.
Yeah, will actually go down, and then 8.5 above is the high strength band, and that has gone up fairly significantly.
Mm-hmm.
And they've changed, so a lot of, I imagine most of the brewers that you featured on your podcast will benefit currently from small brewers' duty relief.
Yeah. Yeah.
In some shape or form. That's kind of being retained, but renamed, and it's no longer done on production volume, it's done on sort of how much alcohol you produce.
Yeah.
as a brewery, as a producer. So there's like a, I can't remember what the figure is, but there's like an amount of alcohol percentage that once you get to that, you no longer are in receipt of the what was previously small brewers duty relief, which means that in the past, because it was done on production volume, it didn't really matter what your split of beers was, like in relation to ABV. If you produce 5,000 hectolitres of Imperial Stout, you still got the relief. But now, because it's done on the ABV, it means that if you are producing lots of strong beers, you're going to reach that threshold.
So in terms of your production value, would you hit that 5,000 hectolitres?
No, we never would have hit 5,000 hectolitres. We've not even hit 1,000 hectolitres. I think we were on course to do about 700-800 hectolitres this year.
Okay.
And at no point would we ever hit 5,000 hectolitres because we're quite happy staying like
scale that you are.
Yeah. But because it's kind of, I mean, I just need to look into it more, but it's kind of an unknown what this alcohol sort of percentage threshold is, and I am concerned that it might take, well, it will certainly take some comparatively small breweries close to that threshold, at which point they don't get a 50% duty relief on anything they produce.
So is it done on an annual basis then?
Yeah.
So
calendar year.
Yeah. So January to, so you might see people thinking, getting to the point they're getting into to suddenly
December end of year.
Yeah,
I've got some left.
Yes. I guess you could do.
Go in reverse and start chucking out table beers.
Yeah, so
for Christmas. Like, yeah, nothing says Christmas like a table beer.
Yeah. Yeah, we're used to get the big imperial cinnamon spiced kind of big winter warmers.
Yeah.
They're going to warm your cockles by a roasted fire. It's a big barrel aged imperial stout. Everyone's sitting around with a 2.5% table beer.
Well, that's the government made it happen. So.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not to say that they can't brew it. They're going to have to pass the stamp duty on, aren't they?
The beer duty is going to be passed on. Yeah. So the other thing that's being introduced, which I think was basically to placate supermarkets, is this. So all cans are going to go up.
Mm.
But on cask and keg, they've introduced a draft relief. 5% relief for below 8.5%. So that kind of negates the increase in duty. But in doing so, they've also confused matters.
It's a takeout, isn't it, the rules?
This is what I was alluding to earlier about pubs not really being made aware of this, which I think they probably should, is that what's probably going to start happening, which I think is definitely going to happen based on the brewery software that we use, when we put a label on a cask or a keg, it'll state whether the duty relief has been applied.
Yep.
And if the duty relief has been applied, then you can't sell it as takeout because then it's not draft. So
that's going to be so hard to police, though, surely.
It's just daft because I've got visions of. We have people come in with their own flagons and we have takeaway cartons, but I've got visions of one of my regulars coming in and saying, I'll have a 4-pint takeout of that, please, Matt. And I go in the back and they're thinking, what's he doing in there? I'm looking at the cast label and I'm like, no, it's got 5% duty relief. And I come back out and say, no, you can't have it. I said, what do you mean I can't have it? And Paul's there, just fill it up, Matt.
Yeah.
No, you can't have it. Yeah, no, they've got 5% duty relief on it. It just makes you look like an absolute idiot. And the only other way to, which I think has been suggested, is that you kind of get in touch with the brewery and tell them you're going to take it out, and then on their next duty return, they've got to
allocate.
Which.
Could you not charge 5% more? Would that not work?
No, it's not me. It's not a pub. I'm looking at it from the publicans.
Yeah.
And they've not been informed. They've not had this letter.
It's a bit like the...
It will be adhered to,
yeah.
I have no idea. Can't possibly comment on that.
No.
I'm trying to think, it's a bit like when they put they tried to put VAT on the sausage rolls, all hot. Remember they tried to do that? They tried to put VAT on so.
How can you bring it back to sausage rolls?
Well, no, because hot food is VAT.
Right.
But cold food doesn't have VAT.
What if it's been hot?
Well, that's the problem, because all the bakeries are like, well, if you know, like if you go to Greg's or bakery, sometimes you get the pasty that's hotter than the surface of the sun that burns. Every part of, you know, you get third degree burns everywhere when you try and bite into it, and sometimes it's like it's been in the freezer. It's a case of like
probe it.
They'd have to decide how hot the sausage roll was. And go, this is lukewarm, so I think you're okay. You can have that without VAT. If it's too hot, they charge you VAT.
I know why it's been put in there to placate. Supermarkets, how enforceable it is, I can't even really. It's a bit
not
mad.
Really.
It's a bit mad.
It seems like they have people like the TV detective vans standing outside every pub going, you just...
Well, this is it. Who is enforcing it? Because it's not a licensing thing. It's like, you know, it's customs and excise.
Yeah.
Don't imagine they're going to be coming around pubs at 10 o'clock on a
who knows, maybe a new task force that's set up to do just that.
Yeah, it'd be like those secret customers coming in with their...
Yeah.
Take out the flagons, see what happens.
Yeah, I don't know that guy. I'd be suspicious of that guy. I don't know who he is.
Yeah.
I only do flagons to people I know.
Like
well, it's like in the old day when he said... When
Sting.
Yeah, he said like lock-ins in the old day when they'd be locking in. You'd get lock-ins for people you know. These kind of like lock-outs for people you know.
Yeah,
I know you. You can't go in.
Yeah, so basically anything above 8.5% is going to... But anything above 3.5% is going to go up in small pack. And anything above 8.5% is going to go up in every format.
That's really insightful, I guess. A lot of people don't really know that. So, yeah, it's worth putting out there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, before we go on to quick fire round, just one more question for you. And you may have already answered it due to some of the conversations we just had. If you could have brewed any beer in the world, what would it be and why?
I suppose you could take this a number of ways, couldn't you, this question? Well, is it because it's your favourite beer or because you think it's a beer that's had such a big impact?
Yeah.
Which I do have an answer for both.
We have time to listen to both.
Well, my favourite beer is Orval.
Okay.
And do I wish I'd brewed it? I don't wish to be a monk, so I don't know if I do love that beer.
Yeah.
But it's the one that's had the most impact, certainly in my early cask drinking days, Jaipur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
5.9 version of it? 5.9?
Yeah, it's still 5.9. No, I don't think the... I think it's had some tweaks to it, but I don't think it's changed massively. Right. It's 18 years now, hasn't it? That's
18 years?
Yes.
Crikey.
This year, 18 years.
I suppose, yeah. I'm not from these parts, I don't know if you can tell from my accent. I was used to holiday up here until I moved here 11 years ago. And yeah, I remember up on the Peak District having Jaipur, and I thought, this is really good, really open by yourself.
Yeah, there was nothing else like it at the time. And there was, when I first started drinking, there was not a lot of cask, to be fair, locally. It was all sort of Mansfield and Kimberley, like Greenflow and Cool and stuff like that, or keg basically.
Did you get any Shipstones over here?
Yeah, we did, but that was before my time.
Right.
So there's a few places that add cask, not many. There's like the Old Oak at Worsley Woodhouse. I remember the Queen's Head and Mark Most Adventurous.
Yeah.
And I remember having Brewdog Trashy Blonde on cask. Yeah.
It's not beer I'm familiar with. Trashy Blonde?
No, I think they did it in bottles.
The fact that they did it on cask is something I'm not...
Yeah, well, they sacked it up, didn't they? But no, Orval is, if you're going down sort of like a favourite beer route, the one that's had the most impact, like, to me and...
Yeah.
It's a lot of drinkers, local cask drinkers around here, absolutely love put it on the bar, and it's like 24-36 hours.
It's a solid beer.
See, for me, it's always been Thiessen's Old Peculiar. It's beer that first got me. But I had a bit of an experience at the weekends. So I've always, you know, whenever you've gone in, think you've gone a place he's not familiar with, if you see Old Peculiar, you know.
The Tiny Rebel.
Yeah. And I'd gone to the pub.
The railway, wasn't it?
Right, it was a railway. I got speaking to some people. I'd planned to buy my dad a beer, and he'd gone up, and I'd normally try and avoid Tiny Rebel, and he came back with the chocolate Old Peculiar, and interesting. It wasn't. It wasn't bad, but there's certain things in life, isn't it, that
need to be pissed about. Me.
That it's a bit like
French.
So how are they using the name then?
Well, it's all peculiar chocolate,
and it's like collaboration, isn't it?
They're doing a swap. They're doing something else the other way around as well.
So it's a bit weird. I mean, like there's some beers that can take a flavour. I put the same to putting like oat milk in I could put oat milk or almond milk or any other milk in coffee because it kind of takes, you're used to taking flavours in the coffee. You try and put oat milk into a cup of tea and it's just wrong.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily bad, but it's just wrong.
No, exactly what you mean.
And I think with the old peculiar in the chocolate was there was nothing inherently
it's not designed
bad about the beer.
Flavour, is it?
Yeah, it was nothing necessarily that wasn't a beer that I didn't necessarily enjoy. It was just wrong. And it was like very old peculiar in the first sip. And the first initial flavour was very much old peculiar.
After that, it's just peculiar.
And then it was like, I think I described it as a tsunami of milk chocolate that kind of just came, like, hit you like a freight train. And then there's a bit of sort of the caramel maltiness at the end of it. But yeah, I wouldn't have bought it, I would have avoided it. But my dad got it for me, so yeah.
Well, you can't
complain too much. And he was very excited about it.
Yeah, well, so he would be. Well, I don't drink old peculiar for about 15, 20 years, because I got the most drunk I've ever got on Old Peculiar at the cockpit in Leeds. No, not for me.
It's got a memory thing to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just reading up. Theakston's did a kitsch, cuddle, whatever the word is, the Tiny Rebel beer.
Yeah.
Kutch, I think it's called.
Kutch, yeah.
They've done a gold version of that as a kind of go the other way. So, yeah, they're saying it's the next best collab since Nike and Michael Jordan, they're claiming. That is bold claim. So.
Well, I had the best collab ever last year in the railway, which was Adams and Sierra Nevada. That was unreally. Done really good, is that a thing? Done really good.
So, I think it's segues.
Or just really good.
Segues into good questions, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, have you got any exciting collabs in the mix?
Collabs. Come on, brain. Being like local breweries are always like trying to sort out collabs, but we seem to lack the time to make them happen. So I don't think there's anything set in stone.
Just get some marshmallows in the pint of Theakston's and do
a more
small Theakston or something like that.
But
we talked earlier.
I'm in talks with Trinity in Lichfield and Bang the Elephant and Reckless Dweeb.
Yeah.
So we're kind of messaging.
Yeah.
It's just pinning down dates seems like impossible.
Have you ever done a collab with Bang the Elephant? It seems like you haven't. It's an obvious thing to do.
No. We've been talking about it for years.
Mm-hmm.
It will happen.
Yeah.
Who knows when.
Have you had any of the Reckless Dweeb bits? Because
I've tried to get some.
In quite hard to get
caught up here. I think I must have been low down the pecking order. I've drank some of his beer, at festivals. Yeah. And I had the collab he did with.
Mm-hmm.
That's good stuff. It's a nice chap as well, Ben. But no, I've not really got anything sort of
in the pipeline.
Set in stone. But I mean, yeah. Other sort of news, we should be featuring on Bruiser.
Ooh. Yeah, we're on Bruiser.
Yeah.
I've just locked in a chapter box actually this week. In fact, they've had to message me to say that there's a few duplicates because they've run out low on stock. Am I okay with it? You'll soon know if you are putting anything out. Beware of the duplicate massive. They
try not to do that.
Yeah, they don't like it.
Yeah, no, they don't like it. We have our own subscription box that we do every other month just to try and make sure we don't have too many duplicates in there. Like I said earlier, we only probably like 2-3 new beers in camp a month. So,
well, that'd be really good for you.
And don't put a glass in. You get a lot of brews. Put glasses in.
I'm also a subscriber to Bruiser. I know a lot of the boxes you can choose with a glass on.
Because it's quite exciting to begin with when you haven't got that in your glasses.
Cupboard full of glasses.
Yeah. I mean, when we started this beer.
Shed full of glasses.
Yeah, when we started this beer journey, you guys come out of my house and had to bring your own glass because I had nothing. But now it's like.
Yeah, we don't
need overblown glasses. with glasses.
Although, I do really like the Merakai glass, the tall one that they kind of almost like a champagne flute. If ever I got my hand on that, I'd like to go. But I've noticed they've changed their glass style now.
So I suppose it depends how often you're smashing, doesn't it?
Yeah. What have you got locked in for next month?
I don't know when we're going live. I'm waiting So the process of it is like, they'll be happy for me to share this, but it's nothing crazy.
It'll be a few weeks before this goes out.
You have a chat and then you send them the beers and then the photographer takes photos of them. Just waiting for it to sort of go on. I think you sort of administer your own sort of profile on there, so
okay.
I'm just waiting for that to go live.
Exciting.
Yeah, so hopefully, like to be in August, should be on there.
Yeah, that's good, because anyone new on there gets a lot of, a lot of traction. And,
it's
a busy marketplace, but we find it very exciting just going down and
finding people
that we've had before or we've not had before and what's new, and it's a great place to sort of see all that information.
About 5 months into my subscription, so I'm certainly enjoying it,
Yeah, we had the kernel. You had the kernel. The only issue is you can't get the labels off for the home.
Yeah, so when I try and recycle the bottles, they are a bit of a bugger to get off for sure. But that's exciting. That's good.
Yeah, I don't know when this is being published, but the brewery is opening up at the end of July.
Yeah,
28th and 29th. If it's after that, then. Brewery's opening in August as well. I think it's about Friday weekend.
Oh, that'll be good.
The Saturday and the Sunday.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we do get quite a lot of local listeners to the podcast, and we could also mention it on Radio Derby as well if you wanted to.
Yeah.
We're on for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. So we can mention that. Yeah.
Good stuff. Right, I think we're on to quick fire rounds. Quick fire
questions.
So same five questions we ask every brewery.
Yeah, one of them I think you partially answered, but
we'll see.
Okay. So quick fire. Biggest influence on brewery? What brewery has been the biggest influence on you?
I would probably say in the early days, Black Iris.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay. And this one, I think you might have answered, but you can chuck a different one in the mix. But best beer by a brewery.
Yeah, all about that's kind of the only beer.
Sticking with that.
What about best beer from a Derbyshire brewery? What about that?
Best beer from Derbyshire brewery. It's got to be.
I can edit all this out, don't I?
Quick fire. Anything from Torside. Probably I have Spartacus on Cass.
Yeah.
I still love that, and you shall know it's craft by the length of his name.
Yeah.
I still think it's one of the best
beer
names ever. Like when they came up with that, they must have just sat there
quite smug
and giggled for quite. I can imagine like a couple of guys giggling around the table about how funny that name was. What's your favourite brewery outside of Kernel?
Yeah. Like I said earlier, I like lots of different styles, and Kernel's perfect for me as a beer drinker because the range they do is outstanding.
Talk about smugness as well. They must have felt pretty smug when they came up with that
carbon
art. Because it's just like, and it's
brilliant. It's so distinct.
Yeah, it's so distinct. It's so simple. Mm. It's so obvious. It's such a pain to get off the bottle. So Kernel are listening.
Yeah. Mm. Change your glue.
And then it's an interesting one, this one. Portion size. Thirds, two-thirds, thirds, halves, two-thirds, or pints?
Pints of cask,
yeah. Cask pint. And your favourite style of beer?
It's going to be very safe, but pint I've always used earlier, wasn't it?
Yes, so yeah.
4%, mosaic, cask beer, nice fluffy white head on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's you in your happy place.
Yeah.
So despite making some cracking...
Six pints.
Despite making some cracking cake beers, just at heart, you still like...
I'm Cass. When I go out, I drink Cass.
Yeah?
Yeah. I love Cass.
Is there
a reason?
A reason for that?
I think it's... Well, I think it's... I don't go out much these days because I've got young kids. So when I do go out, it tends to be sort of like a very well arranged sort of affair with a mate, and it'll be a bit of an all day. So sitting and drinking pint after pint of Abbeydale Deception, for example,
yeah,
which isn't Mosaic, but it's a fantastic beer. It's just, it's, yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, I need to get more into. I need to channel that.
Yeah.
In a cask glove.
It's the ultimate session. It's the ultimate sort of format, dispense, whatever you want to call it, for session drinking.
Yeah.
Opinion, I don't think.
So I still annoy myself when I go into a pub and I have a pint of cask and I sit there and go, John, that's the best. Oh, that's such an amazing beer. That's a lovely beer. I love that beer. That's such a good beer. And I'll go and then order something else and then come back and go, well, I don't like that one. And I just sometimes think, well,
why
can't you have three pints of the same stuff?
Yeah.
I need to channel that in. If I like the beer, you don't have to try every sweet in the sweet shop.
That's only happened to me once, regularly, and that was a smod. That was a smod clamp.
Oh, yes.
Had that on cask at the Hollybush. And
Cats.
No, sorry, no, it wasn't cask. No, you're right. It was keg. I was thinking, oh my god. And when Hollybush was a great range, as we all know. I think I had three or four of them on that particular session.
Yeah, just one of my
favourite. Yeah. I love your cat budgies, by the way.
Yes.
Very good.
Very
good. Modern CND. It's a pretty good combination.
Yeah.
I never drank any keg until I met these guys a few years ago. So I've been cask for like 30 years and then sort of recently on keg, and I agree with you. Like, keg's great for variety, and especially in a hot day, but, you know, at the end of the day, that's like the way to go is a cask, and I'm sort of Tim Taylor's lover and all the rest of it, you know. Mm.
And you can't get it at home.
No.
You can't get cask beer at home.
No.
Not really.
No.
Not really.
And as we always say, you know, we try and get the American stars over here, and the Americans want to come over here for the cask.
Yeah, so I've got a friend who lives in Canada.
It's a little bit crazier that way.
Yeah, he's just mad every time he comes to the UK.
Who was that cask lover that we had on Twitter that was crazy? His handle was Cask Lover or something.
Yeah, he's from America. He came over visiting.
That's it.
And he was there visiting and checking in.
That's it.
Well, I think we're kind of at the end of the podcast. We want to take this opportunity to thank you, Matt, for your generosity in hosting us tonight and giving up your time.
Thank you for letting me waffle for
I think it's about an hour and 20, actually.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, though, is there anything further you'd like to mention before we sign off?
Well, obvious message is to encourage people to visit their local pubs. Micro pubs, breweries, bottle shops, and support all those independent business owners and producers that are out there, because we all need it.
Yeah.
We all need support. And you know, those places are vital parts of the local community.
No, we agree.
Yeah. That my final closing words are go to your local pub, go to your local brewery and bottle shop and support them.
The BBC being
told so how great a job they're doing.
Yeah.
I saw a great post over there. It just said, every time you spend money, you vote for the world you want to live in.
Yeah.
And I think that's so true, isn't it?
Yeah.
That if you want to see a vibrant pub culture in your town or in your village, if you want to see great little breweries that brew locally, support the community, then vote for it with the little pound coins in your pocket.
Yeah, definitely.
Brilliant. That's a great way to sign off.
So there you have it, episode 10 of our little podcast. We'd like to thank Matt for his time that he gave us in recording the podcast. And please, if you're local to Alfreton, please remember the tap room is open at the brewery the last Friday and Saturday of each month. In a forthcoming episode, we are delighted to be joined by Crich Brewery, who are brand new to the scene here in Derbyshire. So we're really interested in hearing their story. Don't forget to check out our socials. We're on Instagram, Twitter and Threads at Belper Beer Club. We also have a website too with more content, www.belperbeer.club.